And this is called a WAV file. And if it works, I'm going to put it on the website. Okay, then you guys can go back and listen to my lecture again. So we don't have anything else to do. So we're going to start in chapter 3 because it has to do with matter. And the definition of chemistry, it's the study of matter. We'll talk about matter briefly. Comma, the changes matter undergoes and lastly the energy associated with changes in matter. And we'll talk about all of these in this course. And like I said, we're going to focus on our emphasis or the topics in this realm that we'll be covering have to do with the chemistry of life. Okay, so everything having to do with life. And all of these you can apply to where living things are examples of matter. Matter is anything that has what? Remember the definition of matter? It's mass, right? And occupies space. Okay, so that's we'll go through classification of matter in a minute. Basically, we classify matter as three things: gases, liquids, and solids. So, and any matter, anything, can be a gas, liquid, or a solid. The only thing that what determines that is this energy, okay? And component of energy is a temperature. So, and temperature is a reflection, I would say, an indication of the heat energy, the heat content of a substance. So heat is a form of energy. So the temperature of a substance indicates how much heat energy it has, and the amount of heat energy determines if it's a gas, liquid, or solid. Does that make sense? So, we're going to be, in this class, we'll be talking about matter and all of these three states. Further, we go into what makes up matter, and that's atoms. So that's that's later on in this chapter, we're talking about atoms. And then we'll talk about pure forms of matter, because in chemistry, most of matter around us are mixtures of substances, of pure substances, but in chemistry we kind of break it down, try to simplify it, to understand it. And so we talk about the two pure forms of matter, which are elements and compounds. So when we get to lab today, we're going to look at elements and see what various elements and what the properties of some elements are. This is probably the only time we're really going to talk about elements, because compounds are a lot more interesting than elements. And compounds are formed when the atoms of two different elements come together to form a new substance. Okay, and that's the chemistry of life. Okay, so we wouldn't be here if we were just, we're not made of just pure carbon. Okay, we're made of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, sulfur, phosphorus atoms. So all those atoms are involved in making compounds that keep, that make up the compounds of life, if you will. So, matters, I said, matter's the stuff that makes up all things. A scientific definition I mentioned before is that it has mass plus we say it takes up space. Volume indicates space. That's how you measure space, is to measure its volume. So We'd say anything that has mass and volume is matter. And there's a couple of things. And then it goes on to show, well, this vase here in this picture is made up of a matter which we identify as brass, which is made up of copper and zinc elements. And if you could magnify it to the point where you could see the atoms, it might look like that. Okay, so there's just different atoms, copper and zinc atoms, stacked together. One thing I will say is that I think the hard thing about chemistry is we kind of see things, because you can see the matter that we're talking about. And what we're doing in chemistry, we're trying to explain what we see based on what the atoms are doing. But we can't see the atoms. So it's a little bit different from biology. So biology, they can explain how a cell divides. You can look in a microscope and you can see a cell dividing. But chemistry, we're talking about the properties of brass, and we're saying, well, it's made up of copper and zinc atoms. The copper and zinc atoms look like this, but we've never seen a copper and zinc atom. But we know it has protons, neutrons, and electrons. We try to explain the properties of the brass by what we know about the copper and zinc atoms that make it up, but you can't really see that. So chemistry, we're always talking about stuff we can't see. It's theory. So the makeup of an atom is a theory. So it's called the atomic theory. And we'll talk about that briefly. What we see about brass, I mean, there's some actual things we can measure with brass. It's not a theory. We can measure how heavy it is. We can measure its density. Lots of properties we can measure. And those properties then reflect what the atoms are doing. Okay. So the properties of the material are an extrapolation into our world of the properties of the thing we can see. So when we talk about matter, we're gonna talk about two kinds of matter. Pure matter and mixtures. And in this chapter, we start off with pure substances. So we have two kinds of pure substances and elements and compounds. And you can make almost a flow diagram or family tree of these. So we can break down pure things into just two types. There's just two kinds of pure things. Okay, so that's pretty simple. And elements are defined here as a substance that has only one kind of atom. And we'll talk about what makes atoms all the same or different. Okay, so an element's, one thing about elements, all the atoms are the same. Different elements have different atoms. Does that make sense? Okay, so it says an element is a compound that has one type of atom. That means different elements have different kinds of atoms. Okay, so you can't have two different elements and the atoms be the same. Okay, so, and that has to do with substances too. So some books actually define the substance as a pure. So substance equals pure, a pure form of matter. So when you see pure substance written, to me that's a little bit redundant, but that's how I think of it. I think of substances as pure, either pure or mixtures. That's what it implies. But most books define a substance as a pure thing. So if you talk about a substance, you're talking about one of these. And then a compound is a substance that is made up of two or more different elements, which means two or more different kinds of atoms, right? So if we say it's two more different elements, and we said the atoms of each element are different, that means these are two more different kinds of atoms. Okay. So remember those definitions. They'll come back. Probably have something like that on a quiz or a test. Are these kinds of definitions, multiple choice questions like that. See what else we have here. Okay. So examples of elements, to describe elements, you know, there's a symbology associated with chemistry and a language associated with chemistry. And the chemistry of the elements has to do with the names of these elements. Every element has a name. How many elements are there? You guys remember?
Eight.
Something like that. 117, 116, 118, something like that. Something. We're not sure about the last 114 to 118. So there's at least 114. And then the other ones are have been detected, perhaps, you know, when somebody, they're short-lived elements. So some of those elements up in the hundreds, where the atomic numbers up to 100, we'll talk about what an atomic number is, don't last very long. So they've been made in something like a particle accelerator, where they collide two light elements together. So with so much energy that those elements fuse together and make a new element. And then they can detect that new element, but they don't last very long. So they only live a millisecond. So they know they made a new element, but they don't know very much about it. And so that's why there's a little bit of uncertainty about how many elements there are. But I think there's at least 114. But these elements, like copper, lead, aluminum, those are certain. We have examples of those. We've seen those. You know, everybody's, if you have any aluminum foil in your kitchen, it's almost pure aluminum. It's almost pure aluminum atoms. Lead, you know, your car battery says full of lead. Now, if you took a car battery apart, you could see the lead in it. There's just plates of lead. Lead is a very heavy element. You know, when you're dealing with lead, because it's really heavy, and when we get to lab on, in fact, maybe today, I'll have some examples of lead for you. A lab on Tuesday, we're going to look at some radioactive stuff. That also has, that's another kind of atom. And lead is an element that's used to shield us from radioactivity. So I don't know if any of you have, you know, if you've had an x-ray, you know, even if you go to the dentist office, they put this thing on you that's really heavy and it kind of feels like it's going to crush you. That's full of lead. It's like a lead apron. So it's outside it looks like cloth, but inside it's lead. And lead is an element that blocks radiation. So that's why they put it on you. Copper, we're all familiar with copper wire. You know, copper conducts. So all these are happening metal elements. And we'll talk about the periodic table later in this chapter. And the periodic table is a way that's it's a table that has organized the elements according to the properties of those elements. And so we're going to look at the periodic table in lab today, and we're going to identify the different kinds of elements and some of the properties of those elements associated with where they are on the periodic table. So one thing, you guys have had chemistry classes before, so you know there's a language of chemistry. Okay, so the very beginning of that is naming the elements. The other part is the symbology, is that the elements all have symbols. So when we write the symbol for an element, the first letter is capitalized if it's a two-letter element, and the second letter is lowercase, always. If it's a single-letter element, like hydrogen, it's just a capital H. Okay, so, and I'm going to give you a huge periodic table that has lots about the elements on it. And on our website, I'm going to put up a link to a periodic table. There are lots of periodic tables on the internet that are pretty neat, that you can click on an element in that periodic table and tells you a lot about it. It tells you about the origin of the name, when the element was first discovered, lots of its properties, density, what it's used for, and all kinds of things. So let me just write down on my sheet here to put a periodic table link on the website. So, you know, I don't know, sometimes I will have a curiosity about an element that I've heard of. Well, go to the internet, look it up. Okay, so that's the cool thing about the internet. You can do that. Now, I don't know if you guys have that curiosity or not, but you might after going through this chemistry class. The other kind of pure substance is a compound. So we said compounds are made up of atoms of two or more elements. Well, we can represent compounds again. They have names. These are common names for elements. But If we look at the symbol for that compound, it tells us the atoms of the elements that make up that compound. So in the case of salt, Na is sodium, Cl is chlorine. So it's made up of sodium atoms and chlorine atoms. That's all there is to it. Table sugar is made up of carbon atoms, hydrogen atoms, and oxygen atoms. We'll learn more about the formulas later. The subscripts in this formula indicate what? How many of each atom? Right. So, water's H2O means there's two hydrogen atoms and one oxygen atom. In the smallest unit of a compound, and we'll talk about that when we start talking about atoms and how atoms are made up, we'll also talk about compounds and the makeup of compounds at the smallest level. So, one thing about compounds is that the compound that results from the combination of atoms from two different elements always have completely different properties from the elements. And that's what this slide shows. It shows that sodium is a metal, and we have samples of sodium. I don't know if we'll have them in the lab today. We might. I'll get a sample of sodium for you if we don't have it. I can bring it out. And chlorine is a really nasty gas. So this is a solid, that's a gas. When you combine them, they combine in a very violent reaction to produce this substance, sodium chloride, which is a substance that has alternating sodium and chlorine atoms. Of course, sodium chloride is essential for life. Okay, we have to have sodium, but if you eat too much sodium, what happens? Not diabetic. High blood pressure. High blood pressure, right. So if you have high blood pressure, you have to go on a low sodium diet. Okay, so you can't eat. But we have to have sodium. Our nerve cells operate on sodium. And when they, medically, when they talk about the different elements, sodium, potassium, chlorine, they're not really the elements. Okay, those are the names. So the names aren't quite right. Those names are the names for the elements. Chlorine would be a gas. The chloride, this is called the chloride ion. So the elements that are in our bodies are always, especially when we talk about sodium, it's a sodium ion. It's not the sodium metal atom. So the atom, the smallest particle that represents that substance in our bodies is a sodium ion, not a sodium atom. And there's a fundamental difference. We'll talk about the difference. But sodium atoms are very dangerous. I mean, if you ate sodium, you'd die. Okay? So it would react with the water. You'd probably, they blow things up with sodium. Okay? Produces hydrogen. So, but if you take sodium chloride, wow, we need that. Okay? So the very basic, the particle that represents that element is different. It's changed. So the sodium atoms in sodium metal, when they combine with the chlorine atoms and chlorine gas to make sodium chloride, have changed. We'll talk about what change occurs, so you'll understand that. So oftentimes, when you read medical literature, you're in the hospital, you're learning about electrolytes. They'll say, well, yeah, potassium, sodium. It's not the element, it's the ions. Okay, so we contain ions. We don't contain the pure substance. Pure substance is completely different. In fact, this is a poison, that's a poison, that's essential for life. Okay, so properties are different. Same kinds of atoms. Okay, so we'll talk about how they're the same and how they're different. So, but there's something different about them. This is made up of ions, these are not ionic. So we'll talk about that. And that, recognizing the difference between the atom as represented in the periodic table and the difference between an ion that's found in our body, I want you to really understand that. Okay, because it makes that substance behave completely different. The ions are completely different from the pure substance. So, I guess the take-home note is that the compounds have completely different properties from the elements that they're made from. So, Here's another kind of matter, mixtures. And mixtures are actually more common than pure substances. There are a few pure substances that exist naturally, but not too many. You know that picture of chlorine gas on that previous slide and sodium metal on the previous slide? Sodium metal and chlorine gas don't exist naturally. So chemists or chemical engineers can make those from what occurs naturally, but those don't occur naturally. And that's because most elements combine with other elements to form compounds. And the compounds are what we observe naturally. Now in nature, compounds usually don't exist alone either. Okay, compounds are combined with other compounds. In other words, compounds are substance, elements are substance. Well, in nature, most things exist as more than one substance, more than one pure substance. And if you have more than one pure substance, we have a mixture. So mixtures is matter that contains more than one substance. So it can, substances could be two elements, the substances could be two compounds, the substance could be an element and a compound. Okay, so it doesn't matter. Remember, a substance, this is a substance. Something that's pure form of matter, by our definition, is an element or a compound. It's called a substance. If you have more than one substance, we have a mixture. Now, we could have a mixture of sodium and chlorine. Because sodium would be represented like this. Chlorine is like that, Cl2, that's the gas. A pure compound is NaCl. The difference between this and this is that these are chemically combined. Okay, so the elements are quote, chemically combined. They're combined in a fixed ratio of atoms. So this is a fixed ratio of atoms. So in a compound, the ratio of atoms is, I said, fixed, I guess, or constant. If the ratio of the atoms is different, say we had a substance that was NaCl2, that'd be a different compound because the ratio of the atoms is different. So for a pure compound, the ratio of the atoms is always the same. It doesn't matter where that compound is. For a mixture, we could have any ratio of these two things, of sodium and chlorine in a mixture. We could have 1 to 10, 10 to 1. It would still be a mixture of more than one substance. So when they say mixtures are two or more substances in different proportions, that's what it means. It can be any proportion. So we could maybe change to say there are two more substances in any proportion is a mixture. And it probably makes the mixture a little bit different, but it's still made up of the two substances. But a compound is a ratio of two substances always in a fixed proportion. And we're going to talk about the weights of these atoms, so we can talk about weight too. So the weight of sodium and the weight of chlorine in sodium chloride is always constant. It's one atom to one atom. These atoms have weights, so it's whatever that sodium atom weighs to whatever that chlorine atom weighs, it's that fixed ratio of weights also. We'll talk about that. So it's important to understand the difference between what a mixture is, that it's a mixture of substances, and what a compound is, because they kind of sound the same. You say the compound is made up of two or more different elements. Well, a mixture is made up of two or more different substances. Okay, so it sounds the same, but these can be in any ratio. These have to be in a fixed ratio. And in this case, the atoms are combined chemically. There's some kind of an attraction between them. Keeps them fixed.
Do the compounds split apart into like a mixture?
That's a good question. It's we're going to talk about compounds. There's two different kinds of compounds. So in some compounds, the elements come apart. Okay, and those are the ionic compounds. So sodium chloride is an ionic compound. We'll talk that's another important part about compounds is to recognize the difference between an ionic compound and the other kind is called a covalent compound. You've heard those terms before. Covalent compound, they don't come apart. An ionic compound, they do come apart. So when we ingest sodium chloride, say you sprinkle salt on, I don't know, your tomato, and you eat it, well, as soon as you eat it, it gets in your stomach, that sodium ion and the chloride ion come apart. That's right. But the thing is that they're electrical. So ions are electrical. So there has to be electrical neutrality. So every positive sodium ion, there has to be a negative chloride ion. Or there has to be some other negative ion in your bodies. We'll talk about those. Your bodies contain lots of negative ions. So the sodium and the chloride might not be together, but there's other ions like carbonate. Okay, so the sodium and the carbonate.
Sit by itself, it'll branch off and go to something
else. Yep. Okay. Yeah. So in your nerve cells, a nerve cell is the electrical signal nerve cell is goes down the nerve cell by sodium and potassium ions going back and forth across because there's potential. If you have two different ions, you create an electrical potential. And unfortunately, we don't talk about that in this class. And that would be important. So maybe I'll bring that in about when we talk about ions, about how nerves work, because it has to do with this electrical potential. And if you took Chem 2, you would learn about the electrical potentials of different ionic solutions. And there's a formula. You can calculate what it is depending on the concentration of the ion. But there's a sodium ion and potassium ions, but there's also negative ions. They might be phosphate. They might be chloride. They might be, I guess we have some fluoride ions, but I don't think fluoride are going on. You know, they have fluoride in our water to make your teeth strong. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we drink fluoride ions. Where do the fluoride ions go? Into our teeth. Okay, to make them strong. So we'll talk about that. But they do come apart. But other things don't come apart.
Okay. I didn't mean to distract you. I was just wondering if you use happens to all the chlorine when they split apart.
It doesn't turn into chlorine gas. It stays as chloride ion, Cl minus. Yeah, if it turned in, and that doesn't say that some things don't change into poisonous things when you eat them. You know, not everything is good for you to eat. There are things that are poisons that that will harm you. And poisonous things, you know, the thing you eat might not be poisonous, but your body can change it into something that is. So that's, fortunately, chlorine isn't one of those things. Okay, the thing about mixtures is that these substances can be separated by physical means. So you could think of a mixture of, a simple thing would be, when we do measurements, not in this class, but in another class, I'm going to have the class weigh out pennies. So I had this big jar full of coins. Well, I'm sitting there, I pour them on the table, and I'm separating them. Okay, well, I'm separating by hand. The pennies are over here, nickels are over here, you know. That's physical separation. So that's pretty easy. That's one way to separate it. Maybe if I'd been a little clever, you know, all the coins are different sizes, right? So maybe I have a big screen with different size holes in it. I put the coins in and shake them, and maybe all the dimes that are the smallest go through first. And then I have a little bigger screen, and I put all the coins and shake them, and then all the pennies go through. You know, I could separate them by size. So that's called physical separation. So there are lots of ways you can physically separate mixtures. And they're usually they're separated depending on their properties. So if I was separating the coins by size, the property would be that they have different sizes, you know, different diameters. Sometimes you can separate things by density. And when they do studies on cells, when molecular biologists want to separate the things in cells, like DNA, the protein, the sodium and the chloride, they all have different densities. And so they'll grind up a cell and they'll make a column of a substance that has different densities. So it turns out that sugar solutions have different densities. So if you have a solution that's 90% sugar, 10% water, that's very dense. If it's 90% water and 10% sugar, it's not very dense. And you can actually put the sugar, the more dense solutions, if you know about density, and we'll talk about density, if you mix things that have different densities, the most dense things go to the bottom by gravity. They just pull down to the bottom. Density is mass per volume. So the more dense it is, or the higher the density, the more massive it is for the same amount of volume. That means it's going to sink. Gravity's going to pull it down because it has more mass. So if you have a test tube, lung test tube, and you put solution that's 90% sugar and 10% water in the test tube first, it'll be on the bottom. And then you put another solution that's 10% sugar, 90% water, that's less dense, you can layer it right on top. And those two layers don't mix. I mean, if you shook it up, you can mix them, but if you don't shake it up, they just sit there. So you have a low-dense solution here and a higher-dense system solution here on the bottom. And in some bars, they make drinks like that. Do you ever see those drinks that are layered? They have liquor that's, I don't frequent bars, but I know they make drinks like that. Any of you guys go into bars, you know, and order a drink that's like, anybody been a bartender? Make drinks like that? So, you know, they have the red one down here and the green one here and the clear one up here. Well, the reason why they do that is because they have different densities. So what you can do is you can grind up a cell solution and you pour it in there, and then depending on the density of the stuff in the cell, it'll just settle down, and then it'll stop when it hits something, a solution that's more dense. So if we had our less dense substance here, we poured the solution in, everything that's more dense than the liquid is going to sink. Everything that's less dense than the liquid is going to float. Then it hits the second layer, and everything that's more dense than that second layer will sink. Everything that's less dense will sit right at that interface. It's called the interface between the two layers. So there you've separated stuff into four different fractions. One fraction is less dense than the top layer. The second fraction, maybe three. Second fraction, we'll say, is exactly the same density. It'll be suspended. The third fraction is less dense than the bottom layer. It's on the top. And another fraction would be the same density as that bottom layer. It'd be suspended. And then lastly, a fifth fraction, I guess, would sink all the way to the bottom. So I might, maybe there is a lab like that. I saw one of my lab books. That'd be pretty cool to do that. And maybe I can do a demonstration and show you just how you can separate things by density. But that's another means of physical separation. And the property that's taken advantage of is that substances have different densities. So we don't do, you can think of something like if you had salt, a mixture of salt and sand. You have pure white sand and you have pure white table salt, and it looks the same. So you can't visibly see. How could you separate salt and sand, do you think? What do you know about salt? What do you know about sand? Doesn't. So how could you separate it? Just add water. The salt dissolves, right, in the water, and you pour that off. And what you might have to do is rinse the sand a little bit because the sand stays wet. So you may rinse it, you may dissolve the salt, pour it off, rinse it again, pour it off, till you get all the salt, all the dissolved salt away from the sand. And then how could you, then you have wet sand. How would you get the pure sand? Well, sand isn't really pure, but how would you get sand only instead of evaporate the water? Exactly. So those are physical methods. Okay? That's an example of a physical method. So you just have to, it's challenging sometimes. And when I worked in a lab, chemistry lab, that was our challenge all the time, was we were separating pure substances. So I said I did research on pesticides in the environment. Well, the environment is plants, soil, and sometimes animals or insects or something like that. So we would treat, mostly I worked with soil. Okay, that's nice. I don't feel like I'm killing anything when I work with soil. So I'd put a chemical on the soil. Well, soil is a huge mixture of things. Well, then I'd have to get that pure substance out. And I'd also want to separate the different soil components. So I had to try to think up ways of separating all the substances in soil. And there are a lot of them. Okay, and in fact, you could be a soil scientist. And that's what you learn about. Okay, there's a whole study. There's a major at UC Davis called soil science. And you can get a bachelor's degree in soil science and learn how to analyze soil and what soil's made up of. It's a huge mixture of things. So that's what chemists do. We'd separate mixtures. And you wouldn't separate it chemically. You'd figure out different physical ways of separating it. Heat can be. But, you know, if you heat something up too much, sometimes it breaks down. It changes chemically. So you have to be careful. You can use heat, but heat, that's why...
Most of the time it would be chemical, but wouldn't
You know, if you evaporate, like if you're separating liquids, you know, back in the Prohibition era, you had, who'd you have in the Prohibition era? Who are these guys that are doing illegal stuff in the Prohibition era? What'd you call them? Remember the Prohibition era?
Bootleggers.
Bootleggers, right. Bootleggers. Now, I wasn't around the Prohibition era, so I wasn't, I might look like it, but I wasn't. But that was back in the 20s, you know, that was before my time. Okay. But they would separate the, they would take a mixture of alcohol and water, and they'd produce that by fermentation. We'll talk about fermentation later, how you get alcohol from sugar. That's what they're doing in the Midwest now. They're producing alcohol from sugar. So we'll talk about how that happens. But once they got the alcohol in the water, they want the alcohol. They didn't want the water. So they distill it. They heat it up. And they'd heat it, and the alcohol has a lower boiling point, so it'd evaporate first, and then they'd collect it. And then, I don't know what they did with the water part of it. It was probably throw it away. Yeah, they really wanted the alcohol. So they just heat it until the alcohol evaporated, and then they collect it. And what happens when you separate something by heat is that the temperature will increase to a certain point, and then it'll start boiling. And then the lower boiling substance evaporates first. And then you have a cooling thing to cool it. And then it condenses. And then it drips out the end. But the vapor, while that's evaporating, the vapor stays constant. So the boiling temperature of alcohol is about 80 degrees Celsius. And so when you heat up, when the moonshiners will heat that up, the temperature would go up to 80 degrees, it'd boil, the alcohol would distill. It'd stay 80 until all the alcohol was gone. And then when the alcohol was gone, the temperature might drop temporarily until the temperature of the solution got up to the boiling point of water, then it'd go up to 100 degrees Celsius. And then you notice the thermometer would shoot up to 100, and it would stay at 100 until all the water was gone. So that works in that case, separating by heat.
So you can't use heat as a physical means.
You can. But if the alcohol would have broken down, if you would have heated up to 100 degrees and the alcohol turned black, because it changed into something else, then you couldn't do it.
So as long as it stays?
Yes. That's right. Right. So some things, and especially organic chemicals, are pretty sensitive to heat. Like you can't separate, like, we're going to talk about proteins later. Proteins are real sensitive to heat. If you heat up a protein, heat's not a good way to do it because it denatures it, breaks it down. And when you fry an egg, you know, and it turns from clear to white, that's called denaturing the protein. It's destroying some part of the structure of that egg protein. So some things it doesn't work. But for the moonshiners, that's exactly how they separated the mixtures, with heat. It worked good in that case. And I've never made that.
Sure.
I haven't, but I'm tempted. I mean, that would be... So here's some examples of separating. Pasta and water separated with a stranger. We talked about that. There are two kinds of mixtures. And write it over here. The mixtures are... homogeneous. And heterogeneous. And homogeneous are mixtures that just appear uniform. So they look like, they look all the same. So, you know, you would think, well, if it looks the same, that means maybe it's a pure substance. Because a pure substance is homogeneous. Right? If all the atoms are the same in an element, that whole thing's going to look uniform. And sodium chloride, that's a pure substance. It all's white, right? But mixtures, homogeneous mixtures, also all look the same. So it's hard to tell the difference between a homogeneous mixture and a pure substance. You can't tell by just looking at it. Okay, so homogeneous, they look like they're pure. So you have to, in order to determine if something is a homogeneous mixture and not a pure substance or vice versa, you have to do one of those physical tests on it. So you have to heat it. Like these, a mixture of alcohol and water looks just like pure water. Now you can smell it because you can smell the alcohol, so you know it's not pure water because it looked the same, but it doesn't smell the same. So that's one way. But just from appearances, visible, looking at it, they look exactly the same. So you have to do something physically to it to see if you can break it down into its component parts. So this, in a homogeneous mixture, it can be separated by physical means into substances. A pure thing, one of these pure substances, they look homogeneous, but you can't separate them into a substance because it's all the same thing. So if you try to separate it, you don't get any separation. It just, if we have water and we evaporate water, container of water, and I boil it and evaporate it and condense it, the whole container of water will just evaporate, stay at one constant temperature, 100 degrees C, till it's all gone and it's all over here. So all I've done is transfer the water from here to here by heat. Okay, but the whole thing changes. It's not like half of it disappears and then half of it remains. If it was alcohol and water mixture, the proportion that's alcohol would disappear, end up over here, the proportion that's water would stay behind. Does that make sense?
True, but homo, I believe, is a Latin for
something.
And so that's how...
That's okay. That's a good way to remember. Yeah, it looks the same throughout. So even, you know, the milk, they've homogenized. They call it homogeneous milk because it looks the same. If you pour it into a glass, it's all white. If you look at it under a microscope, what you see are little tiny fat particles, little spheres of fat suspended in water. And so it's, if you look at it under a microscope, it looks heterogeneous because you can see the two phases. But if you don't look at it under a microscope, it looks homogeneous. Okay, so maybe that's another way you can inspect something that looks homogeneous. So look under, you know, magnify it a lot and see if you can see the different parts. Heterogeneous, obviously, you can see different substances are visible. Different phases are visible, or you can have two liquid phases, like if you mix oil and water. The oil can be clear and the water can be clear, but you can tell that there's two things in there because you can see two liquid phases that don't mix. We will, when we get to organic chemistry, a lot of organic things don't mix with water. We test everything against water, and we're going to be doing that a lot. It's because we're made out of water. You know, we're about 70% water. So the chemistry that goes on inside living things has to do with chemistry that goes in and on in water solutions. And so we test a lot of our compounds and stuff. A lot of the things you do in the lab are looking at what happens to substances in water, because that living things operate in a water environment. So one thing we'll notice is that when we get to lots of organic compounds, don't mix with water. They look like water. They can be just as clear as water. And when you mix them together, sometimes it's hard to tell, well, which part of this mixture is water and which part is the other chemical, because they both look exactly the same. So that takes a little figuring out. Okay. So, because they're two clear substances, you can tell it's heterogeneous. You know they didn't mix, but you don't necessarily know which is which. Okay, so you have to do some tests to figure that out. So there's about heterogeneous mixture. Different parts of the mixture are visible. That's what I was talking about. And this is just a table that classifies it. So I started making these flow charts. Here's the flow chart. Summarizes the different kinds of matter. So pure substances are elements or compounds, and mixtures are homogeneous or heterogeneous. So that's a good thing to take a look at. The visual helps organize the... You blew it up? Oh, good. All right. Okay, so I have a little quiz here. Identify each of the following as a pure substance or a mixture. You know what I'd like you to do? There's a few learning checks here. So maybe take out a separate piece of paper. And we'll go through these. And I'll have you turn these in. We'll get some credit for this. I better write down what's going on here. Let's see if I have it. So it says, identify each of the following as a pure substance or a mixture. So we have, maybe you can write down the question and just put A, B, C, and D on your paper. Put your name on your paper. A, B, C, and D. And then just write down next to it whether it's pure or a mixture. You guys finished that already? Now, it turns out that on my next slide it has answers, but I'm going to skip through it pretty fast because I want to... Anybody have any questions about these before we go on? Pretty easy? Okay, is there any doubt about anybody's mind what these are? Okay with it? Okay. Otherwise, we can discuss it. What pure substances and mixtures. Do you have any questions about pure substances and mixtures? Okay. All right. So you probably caught a glimpse of what some of the answers are. Okay. So the next one, A, B, C, and D, second one. Identify each of the following is a homogeneous or heterogeneous mixture. So these are all mixtures. So you have to think about what they look like. What does a hot fudge sundae look like? Is it uniform? What about air? Is air uniform? Okay, that's what you think of. Sugar water. So sugar water would be just think of pure water, which you know is colorless, and then you put sugar in it, you dissolve it. Sugar water means the sugar is dissolved. It's not like there's no undissolved sugar in it. So there's no like sugar crystals on the bottom. It's all, sugar's all been dissolved. And lastly, peach pie. Okay with that? Okay, well there's 8-point quiz. We still have a little bit left. Okay, so I'm gonna go now you guys I don't know if you looked at the questions at the end of this section. Let's see, that was just we covered 3.1. Oh, that's just 3.1. Wow, I'm gonna have to speed up a little bit. Okay. But at the end of the chapter, there's some questions about that. Do you have any? Hey, Romanique, did you have, was it about this section or was it a different section?
It was this section.
Did I answer your questions? You...
No, because it came down to one of the...
Oh, is it calculation? So it must be later on. The challenge questions. For each, write the symbol, natural occurring. Some of this stuff we're not going to do.
Okay.
Right?
It was one of the odds.
Right. We'll get to that. Let's do that in lab.
Okay.
So that's later on. Okay. So go through this one, see how long it'll take to get through this one. So elements and symbols. So we're going to go talk about... you know, that's all we talk about, mixtures. That's it. Okay, now we're going to focus in on pure substances. The rest of our class then is about substances, pure substances. And, maybe occasionally we'll talk about a mixture. But we're going to talk about the symbology and naming in chemistry. So I can go through this. Pure substances that cannot be separated are called by ordinary lab processes. And are called elements. So the ordinary lab process, this could be chemical or physical. So, elements are the building blocks of matter. The elements, the known elements, are all shown in the periodic table. So we'll look at the periodic table in class. This just tells about some of the sources of the names. You don't have to know this, okay? You don't have to know the origins of the names. I would like you to know the names of some of the elements. So I'll tell you which ones. They'd be the most common elements. Probably elements up through element 36. Okay, so, and then there's a couple of others. So I want you to know the names and symbols of the elements up to element 36. And we'll cover that in lab a little more. But you don't have to know the origins of the names. But sometimes the origins are interesting. A lot of elements were discovered right here in Berkeley, California. So many of the elements are named for the chemists, the physicists that discovered those. So there's a californium, it shows here. That was discovered in Berkeley. There's a berkelium. There's actually an element called berkelium. There's an element called seaborgium for Glenn Seaborg, who was a chemist at UC Berkeley. There's an element called lawrencium. And I don't know if you ever heard of the Lawrence Hall of Science. That's at UC Berkeley. So I think that there probably isn't any other place in the world where so many elements have been discovered as at UC Berkeley, our own UC Berkeley right here. That's pretty amazing. Okay, the other thing, I mentioned this before, symbols are always capitalized. First letter is always capitalized. The second letter is always lowercase. And that's very important. So I'll be pretty strict. When I said I want you to know the names and the symbols of the first 36 elements, you don't have to know where they are in the periodic table. This is what I want you to know. So on a quiz, I would give you that and say, write down the name. And I would do that and say, write the symbol. That's what it looks like. Now, the symbol for cobalt is C little o. C capital O, what would that be? What would that indicate? Carbon and oxygen, right. See, so cobalt is a lot different from carbon monoxide. Okay. So, and they have the same letters. So that's why it's really important. In the symbolism of chemistry, to get the write the elements correctly. So I know you might be in habits of writing everything in capital letters. So I don't know, people have their different habits about writing. But for chemistry, the rules are very strict. You know, there's only one way to write the symbols for the elements. Let's see, the properties of elements are constant. And these are things that you can observe or measure without changing its identity. Now, so the shape, obviously, different elements come in different shapes. We'll notice that today in lab, color. In fact, today when we do lab, we're gonna do this. You're going to fill out a table of, I have a bunch of elements that we're going to inspect, and you're just going to write down some of this stuff. Probably density is something that you'd have to measure. That's a measuring thing. Melting point's a measuring thing. You know, you heat it, and stick a thermometer in it, and see what temperature it melts. And boiling point. So you can't do these, but you can. Some of these you can do. Taste. We're not going to taste the elements, okay? Early chemists used to taste everything. So as chemistry is an emerging science, the chemists used to separate. They do all these separation things. Then they taste it. Okay, that was one of the things. Well, what happened to a lot of chemists? They're not here anymore, right? Okay, so we'll go through these. Select the correct symbol for each element. Are you prepared to do this? Mm-hmm. Not yet?
Yeah.
Want to take this as a quiz?
Sure.
A few more points? Okay. Okay. So for calcium, what do you think is the correct symbol for calcium? All right. Oh, yeah. Okay. So just write it down. So do A, B, and C, put calcium, and then write the correct symbol next to it on your paper. That's right. Sulfur. Now, one clue is that most of the elements, if you're not sure, most of the elements are two letters, and it's usually the first two letters in the name. Okay, so the first one. So, like, if you weren't sure what sulfur was, I would say sulfur would be, it's not going to be this one because that's not the first two letters, okay? So it's either the first two letters, either that one or it's that one because some elements are a single letter. So, and iron's different. See, that symbol isn't, anybody know what iron is? Okay, all right. Oh, okay, let's do these three. Neon, potassium, N, P, and A-G. I was reading these names, so that wasn't that I was making a slip. I was reading these, okay. So we wanted the correct name for N, the correct name for P, and the correct name for A-G. And when we get to lab, we'll start on 3.3, and that's really about the makeup of atoms, what makes the different atoms different. And there's a worksheet that will go through the lab, and it'll really take us through 3.4, even beyond, I think. Might even finish, we'll finish chapter 3, I think, in the lab. No, that's not. Yeah, so we'll set up the composition book. The composition book looks like this. Does everybody have one of these for lab today? We're gonna use this today. I think, can you get this at the bookstore? So you might stop by the bookstore and get one. Do you have one from a previous chemistry class or science class? Can you use a... Usually we don't use the whole book, so I'll let you use another book and we can start in the middle. So if the line's not too long at the bookstore, maybe you can stop by and get one on the way.